waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
So it's all fake news. But you know, it's all fake news. Anything bad is fake news. Evidently, that's what we're led to believe out of this morning's Twitter storm. And look, at the end of this, if honestly, truthfully, if it's all fake news, then why do we have to find the leaker? If it's all made up nonsense, why is it so imperative that we find the person who leaked the fake news? Just kind of a thought. Anyway, here to talk a little bit about what we're seeing, what's going on, how the media is covering the quote-unquote Russiagate. We've asked Craig Harrington, director of the Economic Policy Program there at Media Matters for America. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me again.
So, you know, you look at this, if it's all nonsense and it's all fake and there's no there, then why do we have to have massive investigations to find the person who started it?
Yeah, this is the interesting tell that has been apparent really from day one of the Trump administration and really his post-election layover and then into his post-inauguration administration. It's hard to believe, but exactly 2 months ago, it'll be exactly 2 months in about 30 minutes. I feel like it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
But what we've seen from this this administration and from Trump himself since Election Day and into 2017 is any story that is critical of him, he labels as fake news. That's not what fake news means. Fake news is intentionally misleading propaganda, fabricated news stories that are meant to mislead a partisan audience into groupthink that is counterfactual, that is not true. Fake news isn't a story that was poorly sourced. Fake news isn't a story that was wrong. There was, you know, one instance of legitimately a reporter on Trump's first day reported that the bust of Martin Luther King Jr. had been moved from the Oval Office. That was not true. Someone was just standing in front of it, and the reporter then corrected their initial report on that. So that's not what fake news is, but that's what Trump called fake news.
Yeah.
And Trump has called these Russia leaks fake news. He's called all of the stories about members of his administration and members of his campaign colluding with or coordinating with Russian intelligence or Russian state agents during the campaign, after the campaign, and since taking office. He's labeled all of these stories as fake news, and then he's claimed, as you noted in the outset, that the real thing that we need to get to the bottom of are the leakers who are leaking classified information, classified intelligence. But that's only actually a problem if the information they're leaking is valid. If they're leaking information, if they're just saying things to the press as deep state actors, as members of the so-called deep state, and they're just making stuff up, then who cares if the press is reporting it? There's no point in finding a leaker if they're not leaking actual information, because then there's no point in running down where they're getting that access from. The only reason you'd run down a leaker is if they're leaking real information, whether it's benign or whether it's harmful to the administration. All administrations have this mode of self-preservation, and the Trump administration is like any other. They want to find out who's responsible for leaks. The difference is this is the leakiest administration we've ever seen, and the information that's being leaked out of the intelligence bureaucracy is incredibly damning of the president.
Yeah, I mean, when he constantly hammers on this stuff, you know, I'm back to the quote, he doth protest too much. I mean, if there's nothing there, why all of the attention to it? Or if it is just part of the distraction mechanism that he's trying to distract us from all of the other horrible stuff that's going on?
Well, I wouldn't assign, personally, based on my own sort of interpretation and analysis, I wouldn't assign the attempt that he's trying to do anything. It's certainly very distracting, and it's distracting us from, for instance, the fact that Neil Gorsuch, his nominee for the Supreme Court, is taking a hearing before the Senate today. And very few people are paying attention to it. And Democrats actually don't seem to have coalesced around a defense against Gorsuch at this point. Several Democrats, very high-ranking Democrats like Senator Dianne Feinstein, actually seem like they may vote in favor of his nomination, even though the seat was stolen from President Obama in an unconstitutional usurpation of power by Republicans in the Senate. You know, the president has the power to appoint people to the Supreme Court under the advice and consent of the Senate. And the Senate during Obama's administration just refused to meet with Merrick Garland because the Republicans did not want another Democrat on the Supreme Court. And so right now, that has been totally lost in the wash over these past 2 months is the fact that there's still a Supreme Court vacancy. And if you want to say that Democrats are distracted and the media are distracted by Russia, that's probably true. But I'm not sure that the distractions are intentional. Because, of course, some of the things that are distractions are incredibly damning of the administration. We just saw a Gallup poll out this morning. President Trump is now at a lower approval rating than Barack Obama's worst approval rating. Yep. We're 2 months into the administration, and the weekly tracking poll from Gallup has been cratering to a point that is frankly unfathomable for a president in their first 100 days. He's supposed to be enjoying a honeymoon, and he is more unpopular today than on Election Day and then on Inauguration Day, and that just has never happened before.
If he keeps working at it, he can get down to the Nixonian, what I think Nixon was like 24% before he left.
Yeah, I mean, right now we see Trump is in the low to mid 30s. As you said, this is something we haven't seen since Nixon. So it's not clear, you know, the distractions are piling up. They're adding up. They're hurting Trump in the court of public opinion. His budget outline seems to be such a disaster that it may be dead on arrival in Congress. His health care outline, to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, is unlikely to go anywhere in the Senate under its current form. The Speaker of the House is actively changing provisions in the legislative language just unilaterally in hopes of getting it through the House, which was just being reported on yesterday and this morning. So it's not as if all of these controversies and this cloud of conspiracy that's swirling around the administration, it's not as if it's helping the administration actually govern and enact policy, but it certainly is a cacophony of distractions. But the thing that we see with this, and some reporters have been using this analogy, I saw Chris Hayes and Lawrence O'Donnell mentioned this last week. Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks made this point a couple of weeks ago. We've never seen this much smoke from any government without there being a fire.
Right.
So, you know, the smoke is certainly clouding our vision, but that doesn't mean that there's not something on fire underneath. And in fact, we don't have any idea how far the fire reaches. But there certainly seems to be plenty of evidence that something is on fire in the administration.
Now we saw, you know, James Comey today, you know, testify that there's an actual investigation going on, into the campaign and Russia links. There also there was no wiretapping, so a lot of news there. I wonder how that will be spun as fake.
Well, so Media Matters, obviously, we were watching the Comey hearing. It's ongoing as we speak. Representative Jim Himes is speaking right now from the dais. And this was the first official formal confirmation from the FBI that they are investigating the Trump campaign and the Trump administration for ongoing, the word Comey used was coordination with Russian state government actors, including official representatives of the government itself. So this has been reported, of course, in the media for weeks. And some of the Republican members of this committee, of the House Intelligence Committee, they're trying to turn this hearing into an adjudication of leaking. And what they essentially want, what they've been demanding from the FBI director and the NSA director, both of whom are present, they've been demanding that these two men crack down on leaks of information, which is a felony. You know, releasing classified information is illegal. That doesn't mean that it's necessarily always a bad thing, but it is always against the law.
Right.
But the real news coming out of this, and the news, the chyrons and the on-screen graphics that we immediately saw from the broadcasts and from the internet live streams and from the major cable networks was the fact that James Comey confirmed that there is an FBI investigation into the Trump campaign for, quote, coordination with Russia between the Trump campaign and Russian state agents. That was emblazoned on the TV screen and on the webpage of anyone who's watching this hearing go on, except, of course, if you turned over your channel to Fox News.
Right.
They never mentioned that confirmation. Now, it is old news. We've known about this through extensively sourced media reporting for weeks, but it is a big deal to have it come from the mouth of the FBI director himself.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and you make a great point that the Republicans are trying to deflect this. It's about the, you know, this felony of leaking when what they're trying to cover up is, in my view, treasonous.
Yeah, I mean, and the really shocking thing, Trey Gowdy has gone on several soliloquies that have been 10 or 15 minutes long, where he has essentially blasted leakers in the administration for divulging classified information, which he's called felonious leak attempts. He specifically named Barack Obama, former acting attorney general Sally Yates, and former attorney general Loretta Lynch as potential suspects in this felonious leaking. So he came right up to the edge of accusing, much as President Trump has done. He came right up to the edge of accusing President Barack Obama of committing a felony during his time in office by divulging classified information to the press. There's no evidence to support that conclusion, and there are dozens of people who may have had access to the information where they could have leaked that Michael Flynn was engaging in illegal contact and coordination with the Russian government,
right,
which is why he resigned as National Security Advisor. But the point that Trey Gowdy took out of this, which is shocking, is that there were these awful leaks, and he came right up to accusing Barack Obama of being a leaker himself. But Trey Gowdy, of course, and we know this from sourcing during and after the Benghazi Committee, Trey Gowdy spent 15 months as the chairman of the Benghazi Special Select Committee leaking information to the press. He was the one doing it. It was Trey Gowdy directly leaking information as the chairman of the Benghazi Committee to the Washington Post and the New York Times and other outlets, which they could phrase and shade and frame in a way that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton, who was then obviously the Democratic candidate for president of the United States. She sat for an 11-hour hearing in the Benghazi Committee after months and months of leaks. Always one-sided leaks from the Republican members of that committee, and no one's leaking information out of one part of a partisan committee without the advice and consent of the chairman of that committee or the ranking member from their party. So when, you know, Democratic leaks were going out of the Benghazi committee, they were probably being coordinated in some way from Democratic ranking membership there. And when they were coming out of the Republican side of the committee, they were coming through Trey Gowdy. And so now he's there shouting on television for all to see that leaks are awful and that leaks are felonious. But he's literally has acted as an individual actor, actively leaking information to the press before. So it's incredibly hypocritical for him to take that stance. I don't know how many media reporters have caught up on it, but it's getting a lot of attention on Twitter from the few, from many of the reporters who I follow, who have been, you know, sort of live tweeting this hearing as it's gone on.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, I understand the need to, you know, to keep a lid on things and not to have leaks. But as a citizen, I think I want to know what's going on. So in some instances, having these things be leaked kind of adds something of a bit of transparency, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of there's a balance that you have to achieve when you're discussing leaked information to the press. Obviously, as a media advocacy organization, we want to see good information out in the media that corroborates stories, that continues narratives, that gets down to the bottom of issues, pressing policy debates, that informs the general public. One of the things that we saw from the Benghazi committee that was a problem was the partisan leaks and the leaks that were coming directly from Gowdy's office and directly from Republican members of that committee that were unfairly framing information in a way that was damaging to Democrats. And we only found out that that information was being leaked nefariously because Democrats on the committee would then send out information to contradict it or to prove that transcripts were being unfairly redacted or to show that narratives that were being pushed by members, by Republican members of that committee, were actually untrue or unfair. We only saw that after the fact. So a leak goes out, a reporter spends 2 or 3 days writing up the story, it gets published on the front page of the Washington Post, and suddenly Democrats were forced to scramble to respond to an unfair mischaracterization of Secretary Clinton. And then that took 2 or 3 days to come out. And eventually, you know, the problem, as we've said before and we'll say again, a lie gets around the world before the pants gets out of before the truth gets out of bed and puts it puts its pants on. So the problem that we find with these, with, you know, the leaks of information is there's no way really to corroborate them, which is why the press, learning lessons that they learned from unfair and unfair leaks and mischaracterizations that came out of Republican committees in 2016 and 2015, the press now are doing extensive fact-checking on their stories about the Trump administration. We're not seeing one or two unnamed sources in these stories about the intelligence community leaking information with regard to Trump's connections with Russian state actors. What we're seeing is sources with 9 or 12 or 17 we're seeing reports with 9 or 12 or 17 sources who are going to the press and confirming and corroborating information. So reporters are doing their best to really extensively fact check this information because it is such a big deal. It's just a shame that the same standards weren't applied, you know, in 2015 and 2016, when the media was essentially being used by Republicans to hammer Democrats and hammer the likely Democratic presidential candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that they're there now. But had they been there in the beginning, we wouldn't be in this mess today.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting. Even James Comey, you know, it's been a tortured process to get Comey to sit for an open hearing on Trump's coordination with agents of the Russian government. But Comey said during this hearing that they opened this investigation in July, which means that the FBI's investigation into Trump's potential contacts with the Russian government is essentially the exact same age as the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. And what we saw from James Comey during the election was, of course, the letter addressed to Republican members of Congress and with Democrats CC'd, where he wrote this very cryptic letter that seemed to accuse Hillary Clinton of being party to another new investigation of her emails, which happened right before the election. It took a week and a half for Comey to clear that up and eventually, you know, issue a second report, right, and a public statement exonerating Clinton. But, you know, he did this press conference in July where he just tore into Secretary Clinton's essentially email protocol standards. And he spent an hour speaking from a press conference just slamming President Clinton's email procedures, like Secretary Clinton, her way of archiving her email was actually something that the FBI director was attacking for an hour and a half during a press conference. And at the exact same time, he was investigating Donald Trump's potential coordination with agents of the Russian state, and that's only being mentioned now in March when Donald Trump's president. Yeah. So,
and doing the same things with the email that Clinton did.
Right, and of course, completely unrelated to potential collusion with foreign governments and hostile foreign agents, the Trump campaign and the Trump White House are using private email to engage in state business.
Yep.
So if it was a problem for Hillary Clinton, it should be a problem for them. No one seems to care about Donald Trump's email protocol standards, and that was essentially the defining characteristic of the 2016 election from the Clinton side. But again, with Trump, it's bigger fish to fry. With Trump, you know, we saw last week an actual international incident was instigated when the White House press secretary quoted a Fox News senior judicial analyst, Andrew Napolitano, who's a total crank and charlatan. He cited Andrew Napolitano as a source as proof that President Obama had gone through illicit back channels to encourage foreign governments to share information that was potentially damning of President Trump with the Obama administration and the Clinton campaign and with the press. There's no evidence for that, but it created an actual international incident between the government of the United Kingdom and the Trump administration, which is just shocking.
Yeah, at the end of this presidency, we should have no friends left whatsoever, no allies at all. Craig, I appreciate the thoughts and the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Craig Harrington, Media Matters for America. You want to check out their website? We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Again, you know, it comes back to this. He's right. Where there's all this smoke, there certainly has to be a major fire. Right back.